Well, we have a full house today, a full house of lawyers, which we'll get to in a minute, and a full house of observers, which is always very nice to see. My notes tell me that we have Butler Middle School visiting with us this morning. If that's the case, will the students and their teachers please stand? Oh, wonderful. Thank you. You may be seated. The students are here with a joint program the Supreme Court operates in conjunction with the State Bar of Wisconsin called Court with Class. So they will know a little bit about the case that you're going to be arguing to us today. So we've had a little bit of a look at the students and their advisors. Now I would like to introduce the court to all of you students who are here. On my far right is Justice Rebecca Bradley. There will be an opportunity to ask questions when this oral argument is concluded, and it is Justice Rebecca Bradley who will speak with you all about court process and probably give you a lot of interesting information that you haven't had a chance to hear before. Next to Justice Bradley is Justice Annette Ziegler. Next to her, Justice Shirley Abrahamson. I am Pat Rogensack, the Chief Justice. On my left, Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. Next to her, Justice Michael Gableman. And on the far end of the bench, Justice Daniel Kelly. I have a lot of cliff notes this morning as we begin. So we are going to have, I'm going to run through what I've been told is going to be the procedure for oral argument. If it is not your understanding, please let me know. Richard Essenberg, 25 minutes, followed by 10 minutes for Misha Tessman. Then 25 minutes for Jason Gehring, and 15 minutes for Timothy Barber, and then 5 minutes rebuttal for Attorney Essenberg. Is that the drill? All right, and are you prepared to proceed? Please do.
May it please the court. This is a case about warrantless entry into the home. This court has made clear that when it comes to the Fourth Amendment, the home is a special place. It has said that there can be no doubt that the Fourth Amendment has drawn a firm line at the entrance to the house, and it is our duty to zealously guard that line. Now, that line may not be impregnable. There are exceptions involving exigent circumstances, hot pursuit, threat to public safety, potential for spoliation of evidence. But the defendants here want the court to embark on a dangerous road away from that line. They want the court to conclude that one can enter a home without a warrant simply because the government has decided that that is the best way to conduct assessment of homes for property tax purposes. It wants this court to engage, under the guise of reasonableness, in an ad hoc balancing test which treats this very sacred interest in the privacy of the home as just one interest among many to be balanced against the government's interest in greater convenience and efficiency. This is a road that this court should not go down.
Counsel, it's more than convenience and efficiency. There's also the implication of the uniformity clause, and I assume you'll be getting that.
There is an implication of the uniformity clause, but I think for the defendants to prevail on that issue, we have to keep in mind that two things would have to be true. First of all, it would have to be true that the only way to achieve the uniformity that this court has mandated, that is, uniformity that is as practicable as necessary, would be to enter each and every home, each and every year, to look in each and every room at everything that might affect the value of the home. That's a fact that hasn't been established in this record. But beyond that, even if that's the case, it would be necessary for the defendants to establish that they need to do this without obtaining a warrant. And they've offered no justification at all for the absence of a warrant requirement. In the city of Los Angeles versus Patel just 2 years ago.
Counsel, can we stop on that for just a moment? On the question of the warrant, what would a warrant application look like in a case like this? What would it say?
I think the answer, Justice Kelly, is that it would depend upon what the state of Wisconsin decides to do in response to a ruling by this court that would enforce the warrant requirement. I mentioned earlier City of Los Angeles versus Patel. This was a case decided in 2015 by the United States Supreme Court in which the City of Los Angeles required all hotels to keep information on their guests. And the City of Los Angeles was always going to get that information. Nevertheless, Justice Sotomayor, writing for a majority of the court, made clear that even an administrative warrant justifying a special needs search must always, even a special needs search must always afford an opportunity for pre-compliance review. Always. In the Camara case that we cited.
But wouldn't the application always say the same thing?
It might always say the same thing if it were the case that a neutral decision maker would conclude that it was always necessary for the assessor to enter the home. That's an assumption that I think is not established in the record. There's nothing in the record that establishes, for example, that every municipality actually does this, enters the home every year to look around. There are no facts to support that.
Counsel, when a municipality does embark on doing an assessment, don't they have to view the interior of the home to make an accurate assessment of the value of the property?
I'm not sure that they do, Your Honor. I think that this is something that that might play itself out in the warrant requirement. And I would suggest to you that the statutory framework itself suggests that that's not the case. If it were in fact necessary for the assessor to enter every home every year and look all around in order to assure uniformity, one would expect that the statutory structure would in fact require that that be done, but it doesn't.
Does it require that they determine the fair value of the property?
But the statutory, it does require that, but what it doesn't require is that every home be entered. In fact, a homeowner has, under the statute, an absolute right to refuse entry to the home. Now,
That's true. But if you refuse entry to the home, is it possible for an assessor to figure out what the fair value of that property is?
I think for purposes of the uniformity clause, it may well be. That is something, because the state of Wisconsin hasn't insisted on that right, that's not this case. That's the next case. If, in fact, this court were to determine that there is no exception for the warrant requirement in this case and that a warrant has to be issued, then the next question is, would it be possible for assessors to come in and get a warrant in every case, as you're suggesting? Perhaps it would be. That doesn't do away with the necessity for a warrant requirement. City of Los Angeles versus Patel tells us that. The Camara case itself tells us that. In Camara, they said a general inspection for building home violations to protect the public interest in safety and health, something that isn't that issue here, would be permissible. But nevertheless, there has to be, even for these special needs searches, even for administrative warrants, there has to be an opportunity for pre-compliance review, if for no other reason than to ensure that whatever statutory safeguards were in place are necessary. Now, once the court makes that ruling,
are you done then answering Mr. Justice Kelly's question? Because I have a question for you.
Pardon?
Are you done answering Justice Kelly's question? Because I have a question for you.
All right. Let me just
close it up.
Wrap
Go
up
ahead.
Quickly and say that once the court makes that ruling, then it seems to me the next case would present the question of whether or not it really is necessary to enter the home in each and every case. And in order for that issue to be presented, the state of Wisconsin would have to decide that now the taxpayers have the right to contest their assessment, that they're actually going to force that where they don't do it right now. Justice Everton.
Yes. Now, we're talking about the need for a warrant to enter the home. There was no entry of the home here, right?
There was no entry of the home.
There was no entry of the home. So we're really concerned with the fact that because there was no entry into the home, the statute says the homeowner cannot object to the assessment, right? Now, we have a number of situations in the law where if a party does not bring forth evidence or allow the other side to take evidence, you bar that party, right?
There are instances like
that. Sure, sure. So if you have a personal injury lawsuit and you're not willing to give over your medical records, et cetera, you're not going to be able to continue that lawsuit. That's been in the law for a long time. We had a case that involved Mr. Johnson, and the question was whether or not the victim was going to allow her medical records to be brought in. And the rule the court has is that if you don't allow your medical records, you can't testify, which in effect means the state will not have enough evidence to convict the guy most of the time. So what's the matter? Why are we talking about a warrant when they never entered the house? We should be talking about the validity of saying you don't let them in. You can't object because you are withholding evidence from the other side, and you're the only one that knows that's what's inside that house. So what's the matter with that?
I think 2 points.
Okay.
First of all, I think, I think it's quite clear that the Fourth Amendment issue still arises because the fact that the government hasn't broken down the door doesn't mean that penalizing a person for insisting on a warrant for search of their home doesn't implicate the Fourth Amendment. It does implicate the Fourth Amendment, as Kamara and Patel.
But you can put it into the broader context of you're preventing the other side from having any evidence.
Right.
They can't get it so long.
And this is my second point. The second point is that in this particular context, this is a little bit different, because here what Mr. Malewski and Ms. McDonald are being demanded to do is waive a constitutional right. So it seems to me that the analogy...
They're not waiving the constitutional right. They have the constitutional right. They cannot let the government in, period. No warrant, no let in, but they are penalized under the general rules of evidence.
Counsel, could I clarify Justice Abramson's question and perhaps your answer? I understood your argument to be, and your answer to be, you cannot be required to give up a constitutional right solely because you're exercising a constitutional right.
But you can't be penalized for doing it. So the state can't, in Kamara, right, the city of San Francisco couldn't charge the property owner with a misdemeanor for insisting on the Fourth Amendment right. You couldn't impose a fine on somebody for insisting on the Fourth Amendment right. You couldn't impose a higher tax on them for insisting their Fourth Amendment right. You couldn't create a presumption that they must be hiding something.
L.A. didn't say anything about imposing a higher tax.
L.A. didn't, but the principle...
That's what you're saying here. In L.A., the failure to let the person in meant... you are going to be subject to crime, a criminal prosecution. That's not true here, right?
It's okay. Not true here, but the city of L.A. case is an example of the broader principle that the Fourth Amendment is still implicated if what you do is you impose a penalty on someone for refusing to consent to a warrantless search. If you
charge them with a criminal penalty in L.A.
I don't think that there's anything
you
in the
want
law.
To broaden it to non-criminal penalty.
I, I don't think that there's anything in the law that suggests that the Fourth Amendment requires some type of criminal consequence for its protections to extend to somebody who seeks to exercise it. GM leasing is a case like that.
Let me just change this mic's focus for a moment. So we want to apply for a warrant. What does the application for a warrant say?
The application for a warrant would presumably say that we're engaged in a reassessment of properties within a community, and we want to come into so-and-so's home. So-and-so said no. Please let us in. We need to do that in order to make an assessment.
I've never seen a warrant like that. Usually a warrant says there's probable cause to believe there's been a violation of the law, and I want a warrant to determine whether there is a violation and a violation by X at a particular place. So
I think there are
an example.
I think there are administrative warrants like that all the time. I think that Patel was an example of that. In Patel, the city of Los Angeles, Justice Sotomayor said, you've got to have pre-compliance review. So what you've got to do, and everything, you know, pre-compliance review doesn't necessarily have to be probable cause that a crime was committed. It can be the city of Los Angeles simply coming in and saying, we got this requirement that information on hotel guests are kept. We need to see it. The plaza said that we can't. At that point, the question of whether or not, under the facts and circumstances of the case, they are entitled to go in and see the registry, or they're entitled to go in and inspect the house, would depend upon application of the statutory safeguards and the circumstances surrounding the
situation.
Should
there be any limits on what your client can later challenge?
And I'm glad you asked that question, because it lets me circle back to what Justice Abramson was driving on, which I do want to address. So the point is this. It's certainly the case that in the law, sometimes if you refuse to come forward with evidence, it's going to affect your ability to litigate the issue. It seems to me that the medical records example that we were discussing is not the most apt one, because in this case, what Vincent and Morgan were required to do is give up a constitutional right. A more appropriate analogy would be someone who is involved in civil litigation who is asked to waive their privilege against self-incrimination. They don't have to do it. Right? They can bring a civil action, and they can insist on their privilege against self-incrimination. Now, that will have consequences for their ability to litigate that case. And if
Mr. Essenberg, let's look at that a little bit more closely. So I'm going to take Justice Abrahamson's scenario and just tweak it procedurally. So let's say that we agree
Sorry, Justice Kelly, but did you finish the answer to my question? What are the limits on what you can challenge?
So the limits are this. If Mr. Malewski and Ms. McDonald were now to challenge their assessment before the Board of Review, they might have a tough road to go down, because the assessment, whatever assessment was reached by the assessor, would be presumed to be reasonable. They would have the burden of proof, and it's quite possible before the Board of Review that they would be unable to convince the trier of fact that that assessment was wrong. But the problem here is that they're not given an opportunity to try.
Wouldn't they also be limited from presenting any evidence about what the inside of their home looked like, since that's what they precluded the assessor from seeing?
I don't know that they would, Your Honor. That would be an evidentiary rule that may or may not be adopted. But the point is.
Well, there may be other bases on which to challenge an assessment. I mean, the facts here show that anybody that objected got their assessment raised, but everybody else in the town got theirs lowered. And then when two out of the four decided to relinquish and let the assessor in, their assessments too went down. I mean, so there are arguments that could be raised that have nothing to do with what the interior of the home looked like, but how would it be fair to the town to let them present information on what the inside of the home looks like when they didn't permit the town to come in?
I think a couple of things would happen. I mean, first of all, if one attempts to testify to the internal condition of the home while one does not permit someone to look inside, that may affect the weight that the trier of fact gives to that testimony. Beyond that, it seems to me that under the circumstances, it's quite possible that the trier of fact might decide that that some type of a presumption against them is warranted. But that would be pre-compliance review. There would be an opportunity at that point for the town's assertion that that it is necessary to enter the home to be tested before a neutral decision maker. And that's really the problem that we have right now. The way that the state of Wisconsin has set this up, they don't require entry into every home. That's what you'd have to do if you really were interested in preserving uniformity. You would have to give assessors the right to go in and get an
practical.
Right
you
to
can't
entry.
Assess every property in the state every year. I mean, we all know that. That's not an argument that anybody's going to be making.
But the state of Wisconsin, in no instance, as the attorney general points out, the state of Wisconsin in no instance requires entry into the home, and which is what you really want to do if you were truly interested in uniformity. The situation that we have right now is that the state requires you either to consent to a warrantless entry into your home, or it precludes you from challenging in any way what the assessor has done. If the assessor says it's $1 million, it's $1 million. If the assessor says, as it did here, that only the people that refuse get their assessment increased, they get it jacked up by 10% on average, and everybody else's goes down 8%, you can't say anything about that. That's the problem. You either consent, you either give up your constitutional right, or you give up the opportunity to challenge the assessment at all. Either way, the state doesn't have to justify what it's doing.
It's the entry into the home that your clients object to, not the state necessarily having a look inside the home. In other words, I can envision other ways that your clients could present evidence regarding the interior of the home. They could take video evidence. Photographic evidence, is that something your clients object to?
There are ways that the assessor could have gotten information about the interior of the home. The assessor could have asked, have you made any improvements? The assessor could have looked to see whether any building permits have been pulled. The nature of the Fourth Amendment is it's always going to make something hard for the government to find something out. I mean, it is by its very nature, inconvenient. But we generally don't say.
Go ahead.
We don't say that the Fourth Amendment can be overruled simply because the government wants to see something that the Fourth Amendment prevents it from seeing.
Well, isn't it just a little more than that, Professor? That they want to see the interior, not just for entertainment value or for knowledge. They need to know what it looks like so that they can fairly and accurately assess it. And that kind of dovetails into the comment you made right before, I think, Justice Rebecca Bradley asked you a question, which you said, well, the state doesn't, or the municipality doesn't have to justify its interest. But it seems to me that the justification they're offering is that we need to see the interior to do a fair assessment. And it seems to me, too, you started your argument by saying that this is compelling a citizen to give up a constitutional right, but it also seems equally fair to observe that citizens are compelled to give up constitutional rights to pursue a benefit in any number of instances, an airport being one, subject to search, going on to a military base, going on to, say, if you were going to go tour an FBI facility. In order to get that benefit, you have, by definition, to waive your right to Fourth Amendment protections against searches. So I guess my question is twofold. How is the justification offered by the municipality not a valid one? And second, how is this giving up a constitutional right different in kind from the analogous situations that I've offered?
So let me go to your second question first.
Sure.
Simply living in the town of Dover and being subject to taxation is not giving up, is not seeking a government benefit. That's an argument that it seems to me proves too much. That's an argument that would require citizens to waive their constitutional rights, including their Fourth Amendment right, all the time. The suggestion that, well, the state has a reason to go in and it has a justification doesn't dispense with the requirement of a warrant. There still is a requirement to go and get a warrant, even if, as Kamara teaches us and as Patel teaches us, even if it is the case, as I question, that it would always be justified to come in and look at the house for tax assessment purposes, it's still necessary to get pre-compliance review to determine whether the statutory safeguards are being complied with. And one can imagine a number of cases in which a neutral decision maker might say no. They might say, look, they sold the house last week. There's no need to go in there. You're asking too frequently, right? The statutory safeguards are not being complied with.
How does that argument square with the idea that as purchasers of the home, your clients would have taken knowing what they were subject to in, as far as, well, we infer knowledge of the law and legal processes all the time. How would your position square with the idea that when they purchased the home, they knew that it would be subject to such assessments?
Again, Justice Gableman, I think that's an argument that proves too much. It cannot be a limit on Fourth Amendment rights that the person who is seeking to assert it knows that the state has passed a law that says that he or she may not.
I'm sorry,
but
the Fourth Amendment. What did you say? I didn't hear you.
It cannot be a restriction on Fourth Amendment rights that the person who seeks to assert them knows that the government has passed a law that says it may not. That begs the question. The question is whether or not there can be warrantless entry into a home. A person doesn't waive their right against warrantless entry into their home by having a home, by purchasing it or renting it or
How is that different from going to an airport? I know my luggage could be searched. They don't need a warrant for that. They don't need probable cause for that. They just need someone to say, hey, let's search his bag.
I think there's a difference, with all due respect, from going to an airport or seeking a government benefit and simply having a home. And I think that the case law establishes that.
Counsel,
my light is on.
Counsel, your red light is on, and there was a question I didn't get an opportunity to ask, so I'm going to pose the question and ask you to return to it in rebuttal. The counsel for the town cautions that you should be careful what you wish for, because an administrative warrant procedure that you are suggesting in lieu of the statutory scheme that we have would actually impose a more substantial violation potentially of not rights but an intrusion into the home, perhaps accompanied by law enforcement at an unannounced time versus the statutory scheme, which contemplates a mutually agreeable time. It also implicates the plain view doctrine. So if you can address that in rebuttal, please.
Thank you.
I didn't get an opportunity to ask this question, so when you come back and you get 5 minutes in rebuttal, you are attacking the constitutionality of these statutes, correct?
Yes.
So there's a presumption of constitutionality, and you have the tough burden of showing unconstitutionality. And did you advise the Attorney General that you were attacking the constitutionality of the statutes?
All right. You'd like me
did
to
you?
Address that at rebuttal.
Okay. Those are my two questions, okay?
Fine. Solicitor General Teslin, please.
May it please the Court, Misha Zaitlin, Solicitor General, on behalf of the State of Wisconsin. Before I get into my presentation, I will answer your last question. The Attorney General was informed at all levels, so
okay.
I think that can dispense with that.
And conformity to the statute.
Yes, that's correct. The State's position is that the constitutional difficulties, the very real constitutional difficulties that the Court was just struggling with, should be avoided under the doctrines of constitutional avoidance and implicit repeal. Under pre-existing Wisconsin law, enacted in 1953, an owner who declines a reasonable request to view their property, the real property or personal property, loses the right to appear before the Board of Review. This penalty creates a potential constitutional problem when the view denied involves entry into the home. The legislature in 2009 solved this constitutional problem, potential problem, by enacting for the first time a specific statutory right for any homeowner to deny a tax assessor entry into their property. Act 68, which was the one enacted in 2009, implicitly repeals any penalty under the prior law where the view denied involves entry that was denied under Act 68.
Counsel, you're arguing under your amicus brief, right?
That's correct.
Okay, because you did not appear in this case except as amicus, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And there's a rule, so this is a new argument that only amicus has raised. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And I think there are cases that say court doesn't deal with new issues that are raised by amicus.
As a general matter, yes, but of course that is a matter of this court's discretion. There is another rule, and I think a far more important one, which is one that you referenced this morning in the first argument, which is that this court will adopt a saving construction of a statute where it is fairly possible. And that is a doctrine born out of respect for the legislature, born out of respect for the notion that the legislature should not be easily assumed to have...
But we're on a new kick based on your amicus brief. I just want to clarify that.
Absolutely, Your Honor, but...
And there was a response by the other side to your amicus brief.
That's right, Your Honor. I think the...
Boy, you have an uphill battle with me. I'm just going to put that out there. Implicit repeal, really, that's what you want this court to do.
That's right, Your Honor. But I understand the doctrine of implicit repeal is usually disfavored. But in this context, we have a stronger canon, which overrides any general and, I think, laudable aversion to implicit repeal, which we have constitutional avoidance. And when we have that stronger canon, I think the court should go further than it normally would in a normal implicit repeal case. What this court said in the NAACP case is that this court will adopt a construction where it is fairly possible. So we have a different situation where we have that sort of situation. And with respect, I think that it is very reasonable to interpret the Act 68, which specifically says you can keep tax assessors out of your home, out of your property, from entry. If, as has been suggested by the town, it is such an important thing to the legislature to allow people into their homes. Clearly, if and tax assessors in particular, the legislature would not have gone out of its way to enact a statute that says tax assessors in particular can be kept out of their home.
Counsel, do you really have to go that far and say that the statute is implicitly repealed? Isn't it possible that the statute, which gives you an express right, can be interpreted in a way such that it limits the kind of penalty that could be exercised under the penalty statute before us now, such that you can prevent them from coming into the home, but that doesn't take away all of your rights to challenge the assessment, perhaps just some of the rights?
Well, Your Honor, that is certainly this court has the ability to limit statutes to avoid constitutional issues. We think that the limitation that we have proposed fairly addresses all of the issues that will concern the court. And with regard to some of the practicalities, the Department of Justice consulted extensively with the Department of Revenue, which is a supervisory agency here. And we believe that there will not be any significant practical difficulties for four reasons. And if I may, and in discussing those four reasons, I think I could address some of Justice Kelly's and Justice Abramson's questions earlier this morning about the warrants. The first reason is that most folks will allow entry into the home as a matter of their personal choice. The appellate process that would be safeguarded by an implicit repeal holding is still time-consuming. It's still costly. Most folks will, in the overall majority of cases, allow the assessors into their home. In situations where the folks don't let you into their home, The assessor has many tools, short of entry in the home, that can often be sufficient to satisfy the statutory obligation. He could look at neighboring property values, look at recent sales, look at building permits, look at the questionnaire that the homeowner might give. But let's just say in the very rare circumstances where entry were denied and all of those many, many other tools are not sufficient, the administrative warrant is fully available. And to answer the court's question, Justice Kelly and Justice Abrahamson, the Supreme Court in the Camara case explained what that kind of warrant could look like, what the application could look like. And this is a quote from page 538 through 539. The warrant may be based upon, quote, the passage of time, the nature of the building, or the condition of the entire area, but they will not necessarily depend on specific knowledge of a particular building. So the state's view is that the warrant would say the following. Those tools that I just talked about in my second point, neighboring property values, recent sales, building permits, any interior photos the homeowner might have provided, those are not enough. If the assessor can provide that, that will be sufficient to obtain a warrant from a neutral magistrate. And then as a final statement.
The Camara case was the San Francisco Housing Code case that made it a criminal offense. What about the Wyman case? There, a beneficiary of a welfare program refused the caseworker's request for a visit, and her benefits were terminated. The beneficiary challenged the constitutionality of the termination on Fourth Amendment grounds due to her refusal to permit a home visit by the caseworker. And what did the U.S. Supreme Court say in 1971? Home visits by a social worker pursuant to the welfare program are not Fourth Amendment searches because they are made for the purpose of verifying eligibility for benefits, not as part of a criminal investigation. Even if the home visits were searches, visits are not unreasonable and therefore don't violate the Fourth Amendment. Now, I think for the students, especially listening, they would get the impression from the argument so far that the government can't enter the house unless it has a warrant. That isn't what the Fourth Amendment says, and that's not the law. The law is the government can't enter, that the most treasured privacy under the Fourth Amendment is the home. And there's a presumption that entry of the home by the government without a warrant is invalid.
Counsel, what but was your fourth reason that you started to tell us?
So the fourth reason is that the actual, and I will answer your question, Justice Abrahamson, I'm assuming.
That's a good idea, Counsel.
Yes. The fourth reason is that at the border review stage, the border review has substantial powers to compel the production of testimony, to take a testimony under oath, and the property owner has the duty to make a full disclosure. So the border review will be able to get to the bottom of this. But to answer your question, Justice Abrahamson, the state does not have a position on the final constitutional question here. We are making a statutory argument.
Right.
The Wyman case does not settle the constitutional question, of course, because there it was a government benefit, welfare. There's no government benefit asked for here. They're asking to honor their rights under the Supreme Court's McKesson case.
Your benefit here is to get a fair assessment because if you ever don't want to pay more, and obviously many people would like to pay less.
Well, Your Honor, the McKesson case from the Supreme Court says there's a constitutional right to have an appeal from a tax assessment. But I will just say that in this circumstance, the state has not determined, like the state in Wyman had, that entry in the home is paramount. In fact, in 2009, the legislature specifically said, with regard to tax assessors, we do not require their entry into the home. So if this legislature goes back and says, we repeal Act 68, we need full entry into every home, then that question will be fairly presented. But with respect, the legislature has shown deep respect for property owners. The legislature has said, no, you can stop the tax assessor from entering their home. And that is why the state has put forward the implicit repeal and constitutional avoidance argument here.
So if I understand you, the Department of Justice takes no position on the constitutionality of these statutes. Your position is on implied repeal.
Right. The only thing we'll say is that it's a difficult constitutional question, and it should be avoided here.
Yeah. Justice Anne Walsh Bradley has been trying to ask a question, so just for a quick...
In your implicit repeal argument, it seems implicit to me that you are advancing that government entry pursuant to these statutes does constitute a search for Fourth Amendment purposes. Otherwise, why are you going down this avenue of implicit repeal that is disfavored generally?
Of course, Your Honor, it's a search. The question is the reasonable search. And I think it's fair to say that the case law is completely open. No party in this case has pointed to any case on point, exactly on point, on this sort of scheme. And it is an open question. And that is when the doctrine of constitutional avoidance is particularly important, when this court should avoid a very tricky question, which hasn't been answered, as far as we can tell, by almost any court around the country, and decided on the statutory grounds. And here the statutory grounds are very compelling, because just a couple of years ago, the legislature said, we allow people to keep tax assessors out of their homes. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
May it please the Court, Jason Gehring appears on behalf of the Town of Dover and the Board of the Review for the Town of Dover. The fundamental problem with the petitioner's position in this case is that there was not an entry into the home in this specific instance, and the statutory scheme that they're attacking doesn't require an entry into the home.
Okay.
But it does require... I'm sorry, go ahead.
If I decide that I don't want to let you in my home, I don't have to let you in my home. If you then decide that everyone in the neighborhood except me is taxed $10,000, and you decide my tax is $1 million, I can't challenge that at all.
Well, Justice Ziegler, I think that's a question of due process, of procedural due process, of the right to be heard, as opposed to a Fourth Amendment challenge. And I can directly address that.
My problem is I'm exercising a constitutional right, and you would have me give up the constitutional right to appeal your assessment, to have my day in court, to question the government's taxation of me, because I exercised a constitutional right. That's a little different than me deciding to go to a military base or go on an airplane. I'm exercising a constitutional right, and I'm required to give one up if I do it. That's troublesome. The government can't act without question, can they?
I don't think you are giving up a constitutional right. I think the Fourth Amendment, it protects unreasonable searches and seizures. There was not an unreasonable search and seizure in this case, and the statutory scheme doesn't require one.
What about the due process right that she's talking about also, to challenge the assessment that's given?
Correct, and that goes to the procedural due process, is to the right to be heard. But if I may briefly make one point as to...
So I'm left with no recourse if I'm taxed $1 million and everybody else in my neighborhood with the same kind of house is taxed $10,000? I have no recourse?
You are left with recourse. There are several things that you can do. First of all, after you are informed of the assessment and the change in assessment, you can go to an open book review with the assessor.
What?
You can go to an open book review with the assessor, which the appellants actually did. In this case, back in 2004, in fact, they had an assessment. The last time the assessors went through the town, they also refused to allow the assessor in. The assessment came back at almost 30% higher. They went to the open book and discussed it with the assessor, and the assessor said, you may have done some improvements to your basement. They then said, well, you know what, we're going to let you into our property to see that that didn't happen. And the assessment went back down. So there's one place where you do have an opportunity to be heard there. You also have an opportunity.
Yeah, but that opportunity meant that I had to give up my right to keep you out of my house.
Right.
I don't think you're giving up the constitutional right, and if I can explain why briefly. There's a right to privacy that's protected by the Fourth Amendment, and that's a right to privacy that you're not going to have an unreasonable search and seizure. That, in fact, did not happen in this case. If it's an as-applied challenge, there was not an entry into the home. That's a fundamental right. If we want to talk about substantive...
I know, but the problem is, and maybe I'm just not making myself very clear, but what's bothering me is because I'm exercising a right, how do I challenge if I'm being penalized for exercising that right, if I have to give up the right to so challenge it?
Right.
Or the only way I can challenge it is to give up my constitutional right.
I don't think you're giving up a constitutional right. I think the statutory scheme that's been created here actually protects the right to privacy.
What if we disagree with you? I'm concerned about the same thing. What if I disagree and say, I think it's a search, and I'm not going to give up that right. There's another right here. The right is to the right to contest the amount of taxation.
Okay.
No. That's what we want you to focus on. At least I do, and I think Justice Ziegler does as well.
I think if I would clarify
him answer our question.
Okay, yes. And this is not a penalty.
Justice Ziegler was so kind to clarify mine. The point is the right that's being given up is access to the courts. That's the right that's being given.
No,
that's not. That's what you're trying to say.
That's correct, Justice Abramson. But let me try to respond to your question, Chief Justice. This is not a penalty for exercising the right to not allow the government into your home. This provision applies whether you don't allow an exterior viewing of your home, which the 2009 statute said is permissible to refuse both an interior and exterior. One interesting thing with the Solicitor General's position is that 2009 Act, which created a number of different statutes, was primarily directed to assessors coming in and taking a look at the exterior of homes without express consent from the owner. And it drew a line at the house, which is something that the petitioners have beat the drum on, that there's this threshold and there's a right to privacy in your home and the government shouldn't come in. And the statutory scheme that has been created by Wisconsin actually respects that. It doesn't require warrants to get into the house. And if it did require warrants, it would be a whole different scenario that we'd be discussing here
That's
today.
That's fine. You don't get in my house. Fine. But I assume whatever group effects you want. Everybody in the neighborhood gets $10,000 less on their tax bill, and I get a $5 million tax bill. Okay? Really egregious. Really disparate treatment. Only difference is I didn't let you in my house.
Okay.
Okay? How do I challenge that?
You can challenge it a couple different ways. First of all, the rule is, and my point is that this rule applies across the board. Throughout tax law, there are multiple situations that we identified. If an assessor is going to do an income approach for an assessment of a commercial property, you have to show your books to them. And if you don't, you aren't allowed to challenge it. With personal property, if you don't show personal property and they aren't able to view the actual property that they're trying to value, you give up your right to challenge it. So if, in fact, what the petitioners are doing here is they're trying to have a procedural due process challenge to this provision based on not having the opportunity to be heard, all of those statutes would be unconstitutional. And that's not consistent with Wisconsin law.
We don't have them all before us. I'd just like to know, is there any way it can be challenged here in this case?
It can be challenged. I think there are a couple of ways. One is that you can go to the open book. That is one way after you get the assessment that you can discuss it with the assessor. And if you disagree, you can let them in. You can also sue the assessor.
So if I disagree, I can give up my constitutional right.
Okay.
That's the only way?
Well, you have an opportunity to be heard. You're going before...
Finish your sentence. What would you sue the assessor about?
There's a statute which actually the petitioners sued under in this case at the circuit court level. They didn't raise it as an issue before this court. But there's a statute that says that if an assessor intentionally over-assesses a property, you can sue them. It's not only they can be fined for it. These assessors are they're under oath to try to apply the Constitution. And you can... They can be both fined and you can sue them civilly under the statute if there was some intentional wrongdoing.
But counsel, that's a different question, isn't it?
Right. Very
That's a tort. That's not a challenge to a tax assessment.
It's an opportunity to be heard. There was
It's not an opportunity to be heard on the same question, though, is it?
It's an opportunity to... It is a remedy if there has been some intentional wrongdoing and you've been overassessed.
But that's not what is challenged in a tax appeal, correct? The tax appeal is simply that it's in error.
Correct.
Okay. So the opportunity to sue the appraiser for an intentional tort is not the same thing as an opportunity to challenge the accuracy of a tax assessment.
I think it's an opportunity to be heard on the argument that petitioners have been made that there's an arbitrary assessment that has absolutely no foundation to what an assessor is trying to do. These assessors are trying to do their job. They're trying to comply with the uniformity clause. This isn't a situation, as has been suggested by the petitioners, where it's the government trying to come in, it's the redcoats trying to come in and find a bag of tea or property where they can get additional revenue from.
Let me stop here for that, because I want you to unpack this a little bit. I understand your position to be that there is no constitutional right to keep the assessor out of your house, correct?
There may be a constitutional right to keep the assessor out of your house, yes.
And what would that be?
Well, there is a right to privacy. There's a fundamental right to privacy. The Fourth Amendment protects that right by not allowing unreasonable searches and seizures. Here, it's not unreasonable, primarily because it only occurs if it's consensual.
Right. So what you're saying, though, is you're saying because if you give it up, it's consensual that you're giving it up, right?
Correct.
All right. But then the penalty for that is then you don't get to challenge the tax assessment.
Well, it's not a penalty for that. It's a rule. It's a best evidence rule. It's something that's applied across the tax system.
Now let's slow that down a little bit.
Okay.
One of the things that we were asking Mr. Essenberg about was what would occur if we disagreed with you and they were allowed to go to a tax appeal. Would this become a question of evidence rather than access to the courts, right? And those are different things, aren't they?
They are, but there's a very limited review before the Board of Review. And I think that we cited some cases from the early 1900s that discuss the general reasonableness of the rule of not allowing people to challenge tax assessment when they haven't given the assessor the opportunity to look at the actual property that's being valued.
And that's a rule of evidence more than it is a question of due process, correct?
I don't know what else you do with the Board of Review is my point.
Well, I think in a Board of Review, you would have an opportunity to come in and make your case. You marshal whatever evidence you have, and it's either subject to admission or exclusion, and whoever's making that decision could potentially say, well, look, you can't introduce evidence of the status of the interior of your house unless you allow the assessor to take a look, right? That could happen.
And I think that does happen at the open book. I think it's very interesting that you are told what the raise is of the assessment, you're told what the changes in your assessment, and you still have an opportunity then to go to the assessor, and that actually happened in this case, not only with the Maluskis in 2004, also this example of their subdivision and the 33, I think, properties that were assessed, and four of them were assessed, didn't allow the assessor in and were high. Two of those decided afterwards, after they got the number, to come in and actually allow them into their house, and it was lowered.
So you had an opportunity to get your tax assessment lowered if you eventually then do give up your right to keep the assessor out of the house.
Correct.
Okay, so that's just changing the temporal point at which you have to deal with the Fourth Amendment issue, isn't it?
I think your question, though, is if that could occur, and I think that does occur right now. That's something that can happen.
But that's prior to actually having an appeal of the tax assessment. When you go to the open book, that's just a conversation with the assessor, right?
Correct.
Okay. So that's not an appeal of the tax assessment, right?
It's part of the appellate process, I would say.
If the process ended there, would that have satisfied the constitutional right to challenge a tax assessment?
I think it's something that should be taken into consideration. Again, these rights aren't absolute.
Wait. If the process ended there, if the only thing you got to do was have an informal conversation with the assessor at open book, would that satisfy the constitutional right to challenge the assessment of your tax?
There are additional protections, I believe. That is one of them. If it stopped there, I think with the additional protections that are available, that would satisfy the Constitution.
What additional protections would those be?
One of the additional protections that I mentioned was that you can sue if there's a completely arbitrary and intentional over-assessment.
Very, well, I don't think those are the same. So let's focus on let's focus on this. If the opportunity to simply challenge the accuracy of the tax assessment, not whether the assessor was engaging in retribution, just the accuracy of the tax assessment, if that ended with the open book discussion with the assessor, would that satisfy the constitutional right to challenge a tax?
Yes.
Okay. Counsel, I asked Professor Essenberg, and then Justice Eagler prefaced one of her questions to you by saying, well, that's the difference between the airport searches and being subject to a search on a military base. When I brought up the question of other government intrusions into traditionally constitutionally protected areas of the individual's private papers and personal items and homes. And I'm not quite sure you had the opportunity to finish. I would like you to explore a little bit for me the difference, or not, as you see, between those types of constitutional intrusions that have been discussed.
I do think there's a difference. I mean,
please tell me.
The petitioner has cited numerous cases that do talk about the sanctity of your own home. And
yes.
I think it's different when you're going to an airport or another location compared
that,
to...
That the severity of the constitutional intrusion is not comparable to the home.
Correct. It's more severe when it's your home. That's correct.
And so you would recognize then that the home enjoys a unique protection in the law.
Absolutely.
So what about the argument that by going into the home or penalizing a person for not allowing the person to go into the home is violative of the due process right to challenge the resulting assessment? How do you answer that?
Well, if it's analyzed only under due process, I think that is the proper way to analyze it. If it's analyzed only under due process, I think that is the proper way to analyze it. If we're looking at it from a substantive due process, right to privacy way. And to the extent that there is some intrusion on the right to privacy because you're not giving consent, I don't think that's a violation of the Fourth Amendment because there isn't a search. But to the extent that you're going to look at it from that perspective, then you have to look if there's a reasonable and rational government goal to doing that, and there needs to be a balancing test. And I think here, in fact, the right to privacy is being balanced against the uniformity clause. The legislature...
Counsel, before you go too much further, I want to make sure I understand the Fourth Amendment position of the town of Dover. Is it that an assessor going into one's home to determine what level of taxation that you will receive is not a search at all?
When it's consensual, yes, that's true.
Okay. And are you done, Mike? Did he answer your question?
Thank you, Anne. You were just about to say why it's not a violation of due process, and I'd like you to finish that sentence.
Correct. I think it needs to, I mean, these aren't absolute rights, and when you're dealing with substantive due process, you need to look at what the government goal is and what they're doing here. And so, first of all, this is for the uniformity clause. And I think that throughout the taxation system, it's recognized, and we've cited cases that discuss this, that having an assessor look at the actual property that's being valued makes the best assessment and is the most fair. If the goal of uniformity is to have a just taxation system where you're equally distributing the tax burden on property owners based on the actual value of their property, there is a true government goal, not only a collection of tax goal, which there are cases that talk about, that is a compelling goal of the government, but this goes beyond that. This isn't actually only collecting taxes. This is trying to fairly distribute it among people. And
thank you, Justice.
Counsel, I want to make sure that I focus and understand the actual issues before the court and the arguments. The first issue before the court, as I see it, as stated in the petition for review, is whether or not a search took place here. Specifically, issue one is whether government entry into a citizen's home under the relevant statutes that we're talking about constitutes a search for Fourth Amendment purposes. And it's your position that Fourth Amendment's unreasonable search and seizures, and it does not constitute an unreasonable search. Is it that this doesn't constitute an unreasonable search, or it doesn't constitute a search at all?
It doesn't. There is no entry into the home at all.
Okay. So perhaps the next question in the petition for review might get to reasonableness. But I want to focus on the third question, which is the due process question. Is the third question premised on the assumption that there is a Fourth Amendment violation? In other words, that there was a search here. Is your understanding of your opposing counsel's argument, I guess I'm asking, premised on the conclusion that there was a search that violated the Fourth Amendment?
That's the way I understood it. They said you're giving up one constitutional right for another.
But I wasn't totally sure of it. That's the way I understand it. So if this activity that we have displayed in this case is not a search, and this is the discrete issue we have before us, not general Fourth Amendment jurisprudence, but whether this constitutes a search, if the answer is no, does that then preclude really a examination of due process if due process is premised on Fourth Amendment violation as an unlawful search?
I think the way the appellants have framed it, yes.
Is that a correct framing?
It could also be framed as I think when they're saying you're giving up one constitutional right for another, what this really comes down to, their argument is, substantive due process, but really procedural due process and the right to the courts, the right to be heard.
And what they're asking for, or they're saying penalty, and that's, if that means criminal penalty, that hasn't been discussed yet. Penalty is that you don't get to court. That's what the result here is against these people, right? The result is they can't get to court to object to what they think is an overassessment.
They can't challenge the value of the assessment. And I think they can go to court in other ways, of which they have in this case, to challenge the taxes unlawful.
And the point of the matter is they can get to court, but once they get there, the assessed value is presumed correct. The burden is on them to show that it's not. And that if they don't allow the other side any right to get into and look at the evidence, then what the law says is you can't sue.
Correct.
You can't. So they lose. Even if you let them go to appeal, they lose because there's an assessment that's presumed correct and they can't bring in this evidence because they've barred the other side.
That's correct.
And that's not atypical in non-tax cases, where you bar a party who's suing because they won't let the other side get evidence that has nothing to do with search and seizure.
That's correct.
All right. The questions posed to you by Justice Ziegler and others is everybody else gets an increased assessment, but you're being penalized for not letting them in by having $1 million, right?
Correct.
Now, you can sue for that.
You can.
But not under necessarily on assessment, but on equal protection of the law, due process, the government is picking on you.
That's correct.
And so that's just different. The issue here is not that it's retribution in terms of the amount, but that it's just not correct.
Correct.
And that, then, is much harder to get in under due process or equal protection of the law, because then you get into just the reasonableness of the assessment.
That's the way I understand it, yes.
And that's the way I understood your brief.
Okay, good.
No, because that's right. Only one. Not good enough, counsel.
I do want to say one last thing, too, and Justice Bradley, you had posed a question to the appellant's counsel for them to respond to. And I think it does get to a broader point here of isn't what they're really asking for here is a new statutory scheme where they require warrants.
What?
A new statutory scheme where warrants are actually required in every case, and the government barges down that door and goes in with a cop, possibly even we cited a case where somebody did get an administrative warrant, and they went in and they found guns in there, and there was a criminal charge afterwards. But in part what they're asking here for is a legislature to decide, I think on policy grounds, to require a warrant, which is not required in the statutory scheme right now. In fact, it doesn't. It allows you to refuse and not compel a entry into your home. They're asking to require a warrant, and that would, this fundamental right or this sanctity of the home, that runs against that. It doesn't necessarily violate the Fourth Amendment, because if you get a warrant, I think it would be a reasonable search, but it does, in the broader sense, go against what they have been arguing this entire time, which is the sanctity of the home and the threshold. And it appears the legislature has actually protected that and realize that there is a point. They allow the assessor on without express consent. The assessor can send, based on that 2009 statute, a letter and say that they're planning to come out. And if the property owner doesn't object, expressly not provide consent, the assessor can go on the property, not be charged with trespass. That's part of what that 2009 Act 68 created. But they have to stop. They can't go beyond the threshold. They can't even, I think, look into windows, it says.
Maybe they can't even get to the threshold.
Correct.
Counsel, the petitioners characterize the holding in GM Leasing Corporation versus United States as being that warrantless search of business premises for tax purposes is not permissible under the Fourth Amendment. Do you agree with that characterization? And if so, how would you distinguish that?
I do agree with that. And that case is interesting. It was a seizure case involving the federal government after they got a tax lien of some sort. And there were exigent circumstances, actually. But they were going around and seizing automobiles, and they went into a private home. So they actually entered. And I think that is the most important way to distinguish that case, is there was an entry into what the court ended up holding was a private residence. And there was a question as to whether it was corporate offices or not, but in the end they determined that it was a private residence. And in that case, my understanding of it is that the federal government was relying on U.S. constitutional provisions that allow the government, the federal government, to seize property, and saying that tax seizures, going into property and getting things that they are allowed to seize, trumps the Fourth Amendment. And so the court said, no, you can't do that. And it's distinguished because there was an entry into the home in that case, which is true in almost all of the cases that have been cited. There's either an entry into the home or there's a statutory scheme that compels an entry into the home. Camera, actually, the statutory scheme said, you have to let them in.
Or it's a crime.
But there was no procedure in there either for a warrant, an administrative warrant, or for that said if they don't let you in, you send them a letter and they have some evidence rule applied to them that applies in other circumstances.
Well, if there is a requirement that they have a warrant before they go in, doesn't that establish that that if you deprive them of an alternative constitutional right, if they did not agree to allow the government to intrude, that would make that exactly this case?
I apologize. The beginning of your question, I couldn't hear.
So let's say that there was some other constitutional right that GM Leasing had, and the government shows up and says, we want in. We're looking for things to seize. And they say, no, you have to get a warrant for that, right? And they say, well, if you don't let us in, we're going to deprive you of this other constitutional right. That would put that on basically the same platform as this case, correct?
I'm not sure I understand what the other constitutional right is or what it could be.
Just a hypothetical one. What I want to do is set up the unconstitutional condition question. GM Leasing said, you want in, you get a warrant, right? So why can't we say the same thing here? You want into their house, you get a warrant.
Because there's nothing unconstitutional about the current statutory scheme. That could be a way that
that's
the legislature...
I understand that's your conclusion, but what I'm trying to do is figure out how you get there, right? So GM Leasing suggests that you need a warrant if you want to go into a business or a residence to look for things that the government's interested in. Here, the government is interested in the condition of the interior of the Malewski's home. Why does GM Leasing not tell me that you need to get a warrant for that if they say no?
You need a warrant if you're going to go in without consent. And,
right.
and the issue in GM Leasing is they did go in without a warrant and without consent, but that doesn't happen here.
I understand. But only because you penalize them for exercising that choice.
Well, I don't think that's accurate, that's the only reason why it doesn't happen. Can you restate that last point?
Sure. So they decide we don't want a government agent in our home.
Yes.
And the town of Dover says, fine, your tax assessment's going up and you don't get to challenge it. Okay? That's the essence of the unconstitutional condition doctrine, right? If you are going to insist on someone giving up a constitutional right by depriving them of an alternative right, that's unconstitutional. Yes?
I don't think you're forcing them to give up a constitutional right when there's no consent.
All right. So, yes, but
My light is on and I don't want
right.
to...
Right. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Attorney Barber, are you going to talk only about issues that involve the assessor, or are you covering some of the same things that... co-counsel covered.
Justice, I'll talk about whatever you'd like me to.
well, that's a great answer, but I was wondering what you were planning.
I do want to start, though, if I may, by making one point to just clarify about what is and is not an issue before the court.
Okay.
There were claims brought against Gardner Appraisal Service for violating their rights in their 1983 for doing a retaliatory assessment under 7501-503. Those claims were dismissed on summary judgment based on failure of proof. They were appealed to the Court of Appeals and affirmed. They were not raised in the petition. They were not raised in the brief. So there's no issue before this court about whether the assessment here was retaliatory or otherwise improper. I just want to make that clear from the get-go.
Under that statute.
Excuse me?
Under that claim.
There were two claims. There was the one under 7501-503, and then there was the general 1983 claim, which was premised on the notion that it was a discriminatory assessment, and both of those claims were rejected and both have not been appealed.
Right.
So are you still in the case?
I'm still in the case for a couple reasons. Is one,
all right.
they've continued to tarnish my client's name in this case, and second, this whole case will affect not only my client's business, but the business of assessors across the state and really the whole assessment process and border review. And I do a fair amount of assessment work in the commercial context, and I'm just kind of stunned about what I'm hearing today and that the arguments don't match with how this works in real life. I don't think there is sufficient appreciation for the standards at border review for why we have this bar on person appearing if they don't allow a tax assessor into the home. But I'm also happy to answer questions about the Fourth Amendment issue. I do want
to... Is the bar necessary to have a uniform appraisement? And by the bar, I'm looking at 7047,
double A.
Parent 7, double A.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And while I answer that, I also want the court to look at AF, which is right below that.
Okay.
There is a similar bar for challenging assessments against a business when an income approach is used. It says if you're a business and you don't allow the assessor access to your expense and income statements, you can't challenge an income approach. That's the same issue here because the Fourth Amendment would presumably apply to your papers as well. And I want to make a point that, a couple of justices...
Why is it necessary? You didn't
okay,
answer
yes,
my
okay,
question.
Yes,
you told me there's another one that says the same thing, which frankly isn't an answer to the
it's
question.
It's necessary because in this context, the legislature, the Constitution, and the DOR have decreed that actual view of the property is the best evidence of value. For residential assessments, 99% of the way you challenge these at Board of Review is you get a competing appraisal, which is based upon comparable sales. You can't do a comparable sale unless you know what you're comparing to. It's useless to look at other sales in the neighborhood if the houses aren't the same. If one house has a finished basement, the other does not. If one has been remodeled, so you are at a, in this case, access and evidence are the same because the person is depriving the board of the evidence they would need to make a determination that the assessment's incorrect.
What if the property owner offers video evidence, photographic evidence? Why can't the assessor look at whether permits were pulled for a remodeling project related to kitchen or bath, which might be the areas of the home that would increase the value most?
There's two things there. There's video and building permits. Let me start with building permits, and then I'll get to the video question. This building permit thing is a red herring for several reasons. One is a building permit, if it's required, there's been no evidence here about when it's required in the town. In my experience, they're only required usually when you're making a structural change to the house, putting new drywall, new studs in the basement, you're subdividing the house. They're not required if you're just laying carpet, putting in a new countertop, putting in new faucets, new cabinets.
What about plumbing and electrical, though? In my own personal experience, I know permits must be pulled for that.
Okay, so even you get past it, even if a permit's pulled, it doesn't tell you the quality and characteristics of what was done in the house. It doesn't tell you if the homeowner put in Kohler fixtures and a granite shower or if they went to Home Depot and bought the bargain basement stuff in there. And that's going to affect value. So a building.
What if they show you the receipts showing that they put in American Standard instead of Kohler?
The point is a building permit may tell the assessor that work has been done, but is no substitute for an actual view to determine what it actually looks like. And certainly, I guess, receipts is some evidence, but that doesn't substitute for viewing what it is they put in. The assessment manual indicates that in determining effective age and condition, it's a matter of judgment by the assessor. And the assessor has to see it.
Can that judgment be made, though, on photographs or video that show the level of detail that the assessor might see if he or she actually entered the home?
I don't think it can because having bought a house, I know that the photographs do not always depict what you see when you go in and view the house. And it's great, too. You can certainly take video, but you can do things with lighting and whatnot. It's no substitute for an actual view, which is what the case law requires. And there's been a statute requiring actual view since at least 1868, and that's in the Marsh case. And the Marsh case goes to detail to describe how actual view dovetails with the uniformity clause. Was there a question over here?
Indeed. So given your responses to Justice Bradley, it sounds to me like evidentiary questions. Why should this not be dealt with as an evidentiary matter as opposed to a restriction on the right to challenge a tax assessment?
Because given the importance the statutes, an assessment manual place on actual view, I can't conceive of a circumstance where you're challenging the amount, the correctness, not talking about the situation of an intentional or retaliatory assessment. You're just talking about, I think it's too high. I can't think of a situation where a homeowner could prevail on that without presenting without an actual view of the home. That's what you need to determine whether it's comparable. That's what you need to do a cost approach. Without that evidence, yes, a homeowner can come in and say, okay, great, my soffits are bad, I've got some mold here. You can't take them at their word. There has to be an opportunity to challenge that evidence. And just like with a personal injury case or anything else, if you are depriving the board of the best evidence to make that determination, the statute says you can't come in.
What about when you complete your assessment, you come up with a value for the improvements and a value for the land, correct?
Correct.
What if the petitioners did not allow a view of the interior of the home, but their concern about the assessment is actually the value of the land? Shouldn't they be able to challenge that on appeal?
The thing is, in that situation, well, number one, in that situation, the assessor is going to have access to the land, unless so I don't think that's going to arise.
Well, it could arise here. So the Malewskis did not allow the assessor to come into the home, invited them to look around, right? So the assessment could have, I'm assuming that the assessor, when he did his job and determining the assessed value of the Maliski's home, came up with a number for the land and then a number for the improvements.
Correct. The land stayed constant from the previous assessment.
So the Maliski's get that assessed value, and they look at it, and they say, yeah, we're okay with the value on the improvements, but, you know, they're way off on the land. We want to challenge that. Now, the fact that they did not allow you in to do the interior view has nothing to do with the value of the land, right?
I agree. I mean, I understand where you're going with that. I think the point is that the assessment manual has a detailed uniform process. The property is assessed as a whole. You pay taxes on it as a whole. The statutes require both an interior and exterior view. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, assessors simply couldn't do their jobs if you had some homeowner saying, well, you can come look at my side yard, not my backyard. You can come in my living room, but not my bathroom.
Well, what about modern technology, for example? Cell phone's pretty small, but conceivably Mr. Maliski and Ms. McDonald could have offered to FaceTime with the assessor and walked around with their iPad, giving a view of the house and even closing in on the level of detail that the assessor wants to see. Why can't that modern technology constitute a view of the interior of the home?
Well, I have an answer for that. You're not going to like it, though, probably. The answer is because the legislature has prescribed an actual view, which the DOR, which the legislature says you're required to follow DOR, requires on-site visit. And that might be what you're suggesting, perfectly reasonable, but that's something for the legislature to decide. And that's kind of one of the overall theme here is really what they're asking this court to do is rip out the guts of a comprehensive tax assessment legislation and rewrite it by judicial fiat.
I don't think that's what the petitioners are asking, because you would concede that the Constitution trumps the statute, correct?
Yes, I can see that. I don't believe there's a constitutional violation here. And I believe that what they would do here, if they get what they want, it would have significant impact beyond merely the instance of a residential assessment here. I think you're going to be hamstringing boards of review. You're also going to have to deal with the provision in the beginning part of 47.7a, which requires full disclosure.
Isn't the government required to look at alternative means of satisfying its objectives under a statute if the Constitution is implicated? I agree with you. It's the job of the legislature to do that, but don't they have an obligation to do that?
Well, if you're talking about the Solicitor General's argument here.
I'm not.
Okay, you're not? Okay. Well, I guess I'm not understanding the question.
Okay. My question is, ties into my previous questions about looking at whether there are alternatives that the government could engage other than the statutory prescription of the assessor must enter the home. Isn't the government obligated, particularly in light of modern technology, given the constitutional implications of home entry, to look at those alternatives?
If you presuppose a constitutional violation, then I guess yes. But I don't agree there's a constitutional violation here. Well, one, because of the consent. And two, there's been no discussion here at all about what the reasonableness of what an inspector does. And Birchwood is clear on that. Reasonableness is the key.
Listen, were there any offers here of a videotape?
No, there was not.
An offer of an iPad?
Nope, not in the record.
Well, they were prevented from appearing altogether, correct, in writing or in person?
By statute, they did in fact physically appear and they tried to appear and they didn't.
But
by statute, they that's correct.
Refused entry, they did not offer alternatives, did they?
To viewing the interior of the home, no.
No, okay.
That's correct.
So these are all hypothetical.
That's correct.
So,
well, one thing that's not a hypothetical, though, is if it's really that important to have an actual view of the interior, you could get a warrant, couldn't you?
I see my yellow lights, and I have a couple responses to that and why a warrant here is impracticable. I'd like to go back to just reference Birchwood really quickly. The court there mentioned when looking at whether we should require a warrant, we should look at what's the benefit of a warrant. And the court identified two chief benefits. One is an individualized determination of probable cause or some sort of wrongdoing. And the second benefit of a warrant is you have a magistrate that can limit it. Neither of those would apply here. because in every instance, the warrant would say, we're conducting a revaluation, the taxpayer won't let us in, we need to get in. The statutes require an interior review of the entire house. There'd be no basis to limit that. So you would have pro forma warrants, there'd be thousands of them, and there'd be a judge rubber stamping that. And quite frankly, I find that's more atrocious and more of an affront to the Fourth Amendment if you're just having a meaningless piece of paper that in every case is going to be signed and stamped when the effect is going to be the same. This isn't even like Camaro where you can say there's a reason that this block of the neighborhood is blighted. Every case would be, we need to get in because the state law says we have to. They won't let us in. Give us a warrant. Now, there is the administrative warrant under Chapter 66. However, if you look at in personal experience, that warrant is mostly used in conditions of when you have a blighted house, when there's a fire, if there's going to be a condemnation proceeding or some sort of public nuisance determination.
But it specifically mentions property assessment
It does, and note that when you have fire damage and there's the statutory formula, it has to be demolished if it's more than 50% of the value. Normally an assessor does that, and a lot of the city inspectors are also assessors. If you look at the sample warrant under that statute, the sample warrant refers to there's reason to believe the property is in violation of X code provision. There's no violation here. We're not looking for violations.
But the statute itself indicates that those are illustrative, correct? Meaning the sample warrants are not designed to provide an example for each instance under which warrants may be gotten administratively.
I would agree generally. I don't agree there was any contemplation that statute would be used on a routine basis to do warrants for a routine tax assessment.
Why do you say that?
Because they've never been done. We've had this interior review. We've had the actual view requirement for 100 years. Assessors do this across the state on a regular basis. I'm not aware of any instance, at least in my practice, where I've seen this happen, where someone has gotten a warrant to just inspect the house. And it's an inspection. You're not looking for a crime. You're not seizing anything. You're not rifling through personal belongings. You're looking to see, okay, you've got a new floor. You have new cabinets. It's a reasonable intrusion. And that point has been completely missed. It's a reasonable intrusion.
Is there anything about the administrative warrant provision that suggests it would not be an appropriate mechanism to use here? Anything in the language?
Anything in the language of the actual statute. I don't have an answer for that off the top of my head other than just the sample warrant, I think, contemplates an enforcement proceeding of some kind, and in practice that's how they're used. I see my red light is on.
Yes,
thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Eisenberg, I have to tell you, my experience has been consistent with what Mr. Barber just said regarding administrative warrants. It would be scary, really, to think that the government could get a warrant just because it wanted to get into someone's home to check out their cabinets. That can't be really what you want.
It seems to me scarier to think that the government can go in to check out their cabinets just because they want to go in and check out their cabinets.
Well,
I think
you probably do have the right to say no to them coming into your home. But you really think the recourse should be that they ask a judge to rubber stamp a warrant and all they have to do is say it's allowed under 66 and we get in just because we say so?
I don't think that you have to decide. I don't know exactly what the recourse is, and I don't think you have to decide that in this case. Here's how I think this sorts itself out.
I mean, let me just button that up a little bit. There would be really no constitutional check for a court to engage in if all they have to do is say we want to do a tax assessment, give us the warrant. I mean, there's no safeguard. There's no probable cause. There's no, hey, show me what's wrong here. There's nothing that elevates this beyond their request, and it's rubber stamped. That's troublesome.
Assume that this court were to determine, like in Patel, like in Camara, that if you want to conduct a special needs search, and that's what this is, you got to have some type of pre-compliance review. At this point, the state of Wisconsin still has a statute that says it gives homeowners an absolute right to say, no, you don't have to let the assessor in. That would still be in effect. Now, it could be that the state of Wisconsin will decide to repeal that protection of homeowners, but I don't think we can assume that. And so it seems to me that you have a situation now where the chimeras are people in the position of the petitioners here either have to consent to a search of their home or they are absolutely precluded from challenging whatever the assessor decides to do from to do to them. And that bar is absolute. That bar applies whether or not they're going to raise the condition of the interior of their home. Are they going to talk just about the land? Are they going to simply point out to the fact that it's implausible to think that their home could have gone up 10% while everybody else's home has gone down 10%? They can't say anything. They can't even appear at the hearing.
I understand your, I mean, that argument I understand. I just really wanted to press you a little bit on whether you really are saying that they need to get an administrative warrant, because there's really no judicial oversight in that.
There is just as much protection there as there is. In fact, one of the reasons that the Supreme Court of Battelle and the Supreme Court in Comer said that you have to get an administrative warrant is because one of the things that you do is determine whether the statutory safeguards have been complied with. But I don't think we have to get to that case. I mean, the respondents here want to say, well, the administrative warrant would always issue. Well, I don't know that. I don't know that because I don't know.
I think they'd never issue.
I don't know. I don't know, first of all, that the state of Wisconsin would choose to repeal the absolute protection that homeowners have.
There's a foundational issue that I want you to clear up, because I wasn't sure about your response earlier. I thought from your briefs you were saying this is as applied, okay, to the petitioners. The other side is saying, no, this is a facial challenge. And then a question was asked of the Solicitor General. Well, he was noticed all the way through, so that part of it doesn't matter. But I'm interested because the statutes that we're questioning are presumed to be constitutional if it's a facial challenge. But they're not. If there is no presumption they were constitutionally applied. So I need to know, what are you arguing?
We think it's an as-applied challenge because it is possible that a homeowner would prohibit an assessor from making a view of the property, right? We talk about actual view, but the legislature didn't say that you have to go inside the house. It just says actual view. It is possible that a homeowner would prevent an assessor from affecting an actual view that wouldn't violate the Fourth Amendment, that it would be a view that takes place from outside the home or its curtilage. And because the homeowner in that case would have no Fourth Amendment right to assert, the statute could be applied to that particular homeowner. So imagine someone who is, you know, precluded from standing in an open field that's outside the curtilage and looking at the home. If the homeowner were to preclude them from doing that, we don't think that the homeowner would have a defense, so that's why we believe it's an as-applied challenge.
Counsel, I left you with the question of, is there a presumption of constitutionality? Yes. And if so, how do you overcome it? So I'd like that answer.
Well,
that was saved from the end.
I think in this case, we're talking about the sanctity. Well, my light has gone on.
Yeah, you may go ahead, because the questions were asked of the other side of this argument, and my notes tell me 4 minutes over, actually, the time limit. So.
And if we're going to use it, that you can deal with it in rebuttal, I think you have to deal with it. So let's deal with it.
Yeah. All right. In this case, I think we have a presumption against warrantless searches of the home. We have the government coming in and saying that unless you let us in, we're going to impose a penalty on you, a rather onerous penalty. I think under the case law, that is sufficient to overcome any presumption of constitutionality that might exist. And
so you have two fighting presumptions.
I do believe it's an as-applied challenge.
The rule about as-applied challenges is in a case called Society Insurance. And it says that the party who's challenging the as-applied has to bring in strong evidence that as applied to him or her or it, that it's unconstitutional. So when you boil them down presumption is, whether you call it a presumption or not, the challenger's obligation is to bring in the evidence.
Justice Ann Walsh, President.
And what is your evidence here? Just
our evidence two here presumptions? Is that you have a constitutional rule that creates a presumption against warrantless entry into mm-hmm. the home. You have Supreme Court precedent that says even if you're conducting an administrative search for special needs, you have to afford an opportunity to pre-compliance review. Here we have the defendants coming in and saying that they have the right to go into everyone's home every year if they want to and look in each and every room at each and everything that might affect the value of the home, and they can do it without obtaining a warrant. I think that overcomes any presumption of constitutionality.
Counsel, I ought to make sure that I understand your argument. I asked your opposing counsel about your argument because I wasn't sure I'd be able to ask you, but let me briefly ask you. That first issue is your Fourth Amendment. Third issue is your due process. In order to prevail on your third issue, is it premised on having a violation of the Fourth Amendment?
It is not. Matthews versus Eldridge, the McKesson case that we cited, say that there absolutely must be an opportunity for a pre-deprivation or post-deprivation remedy. Now, it could be that if there wasn't a Fourth Amendment violation, that the persons in the position of Mr. Malewski and Ms. McDonald would somehow be barred from, say, bringing up the condition of their home. But
Counselor,
here, the preclusion is absolute. It can say absolutely nothing.
Your issue, though, is framed that way. I mean, whether the statutes that we've talked about in the issue one violate the due process clause by depriving a citizen of any right to appeal if the citizen denies consent, et cetera. So it's not premised. I thought it was. I thought number three was premised on a violation of number one. Well, you didn't get to three unless there was a problem with one.
It's hard for me to say. I mean, we think there clearly was a Fourth Amendment violation. We think that they actually are being forced to choose between their constitutional rights. But even if for some reason this court were to conclude that there wasn't a Fourth Amendment violation, the absolute bar against any opportunity at all to be heard violates Matthews and McKesson.
Thank you very much. Well, a complicated case. Your briefs were complicated, very, very interesting. Your arguments were very well done. We are going to conclude this argument, and the court will take a break and come back at 1:30 when we'll hear our third case for the day. And Justice Rebecca Bradley will be out to chat with the students in the course. Thank you.